So we start from 107,000. All things she carries in her shapeless dust. She is earth. In the beginning it is a shapeless dust. It is absolutely an expression of unconsciousness. Her giant energy died to petty forms, which is still the case. The energy that is there in every atom, in every piece of dust, is concerned with making forms. But even we, so much is given to us, so much energy, so much conscious force the Divine has put into us, and we concern ourselves with very small, very shallow attempts at expression. We don't rise out of this state, or we don't usually stay at this lowest level. It is very unfortunate. In the slow tentative motion of her power, with only frail blunt instruments for use, she has accepted as her nature's need and given to man as his stupendous work, a labor to the gods impossible. This force of progressive evolution of consciousness that for a long time is trapped in the mud, in the dust, it is moving very slowly, a tentative motion. It is almost by trial and error. Every step in our life is not a progress, not necessarily. Everything is not an expression of a greater possibility of perfection. It could be, but it is not. Because we have only frail, blunt instruments for use. Blunt in the sense, it is dull. It doesn't cut through the inertia. If it is sharp, if there is a sharpness, if there is some kind of conscious effort, then we break out of our dull heaviness, unconsciousness, inertia. But it is as if nature is making this experiment to break out of this inertia, to move to another level of manifestation. This is the need of earth, gradually to move towards something more luminous, more perfect, more beautiful, in even the world of outer manifestation. It is an experiment that she has tried. And given to man as his stupendous work, a labor to the gods impossible. This is the difficult. The gods will not make this attempt. The gods will move. You need a book. She needs a book, I think. It's okay. Page 108. This progressive power of manifestation, of evolution, which is the mother's power. At every stage, something new has to be born, has to be expressed. And she has given to man this responsibility. She has accepted as her nature's need. This is earth nature. Earth has to move forward, has to move upwards. The slope is steep. Earth falls back into the darkness, falls back into error, and yet has to struggle, has to strive to break out of inertia towards more and more perfect manifestation of consciousness, which is a labor that the gods cannot do, because each god is an embodiment of perfection in his field. He can't take up the task of breaking out of a particular state and move on to another state, then he's not that god. A god of light will always be light. Man is a mixture. Man has all the possibilities. He has darkness, he has light. He has to make the effort of breaking from one stage to the other. This is the greatest privilege of being a man. A man doesn't have to be what he is now. forever. What I am now today will be replaced by what I can be tomorrow. If I participate, if I collaborate, if I put my conscious effort behind my expression, I can move to another level. Even in the outer field, even in the physical field, and then in the inner fields as well. This is a stupendous work. She has accepted as her nature's need and given to man as his stupendous work, a labor to the gods impossible. What is man? A life living hardly in a field of death, surrounded by constant deterioration, constant breakups, and yet in spite of it, the life force continues to climb, continues to push its way forward, upward. It has a struggle. The enormous effort that a little seed has to make to break its way out of the mud. The mud is always pulling it down. Man is also made of mud. He's always being pulled down. But something in him says, I can't stay like this forever. I have to move. A life living hardly, hardly with difficulty, in a field of death, its portion claims of immortality. And that is such a daring, you say, statement, because we do claim immortality. We do not like death. We want to break out of this. It implies that that element of immortality is hidden in the mortality, which is why it is pushing its way upwards. That element of perfection, that light, that truth, is trapped in the darkness, and it wants to work its way up, out. And so man, the mortal, is not satisfied with his mortality. He has to find a way out. That is the whole secret of our existence, even the physical existence. A brute half-conscious body, that is the home. We live in a half-conscious body, or less than half. A brute half-conscious body serves as means. It is in this body, not in some other higher stratosphere, not in some other heaven that you can live forever. You leave your body down below and go up and live in some swarga where we are perfect, because you can't die because you don't have a body. No, it is here, in the world that we have been placed, in this world, with this matter that we have been made out of, to be able to manifest, to plant that expression of perfection. And what is one of the fundamental aspects of the work of the mother, which is why it took so long, it is so strenuous, because every cell has its resistance. Every particle in the being resists change. The weight of ignorance, unconsciousness, inertia, and yet the push, the drive, the life energy, which is a continuous battle. This is what was so clearly seen. Even when the mother left the body, she was working on this aspect of the yoga, to manifest this light, which is hidden. It is not bringing it down, it is already down. To make it appear, make it manifest through the layers of resistance. And each layer is so obstinate, it will not go. You have to work constantly trying to clear the path of the light. It is half conscious, the body. But in that there is also the other half of consciousness. Half unconscious, half consciousness. So it is a battlefield. Serves as means. And then a mind that must recover a knowledge lost. A knowledge, a truth, which the mind which has lost its contact with the source of original, intuitive projection of consciousness. Mind has come in between, it's like a lid. The mind is our being, our conscious being, is sometimes compared to a vessel. And the mind is a shining lid, as it is described in the Upanishads. It blocks the descent of the light. It thinks it understands. When you think you have understood, when you think you know, then you certainly don't know. You have to go through the experience. A mind that must recover, a knowledge lost. Because originally the mind is a projection of the higher supermind. At some stage, a kind of a division has come because the mind has its own ego, has its own self-confidence, has its certitudes. It says, I don't need anybody's help. I understand everything by myself. I am an intelligent person. And that is where you lose that knowledge. Knowledge is not of the mind. Knowledge of the truth is experience. That is why, if you go back to the past, in a way, the Vedic age is the age of truth. It is not the age of mental knowledge. They did not call themselves rishis. The seekers, they were not rishis, they were not sages, they were not yogis, they were seers. They called themselves poets. A poet sees, a poet experiences. He doesn't try to explain, he doesn't try to convince. If he does, then he's not a poet. He's a thinker. So this is what happened later. In the later times, that direct connection with the light was replaced by thought, which tried to analyze, explain, classify, and that ray of direct dissenting light was trapped by the mental half-knowledge. Mind always divides everything into two. Right and wrong, good and bad, truth and falsehood. And that is why that knowledge that the mind has is always half. It's never whole. So a mind that must recover a knowledge lost. Why has it lost it? Because it is part of the world of that originates out of inconscience. It has grown out of the body, out of life and mind. We are body, life, mind. And this has grown out of the world of dust, of inertia, of unconsciousness. A mind that must recover a knowledge lost, held in stone grip by the world's inconscience, and wearing still these countless knots of law. Because at a certain stage, formation needs certain fixities. A form has to be fixed, otherwise it doesn't have a form. That fixity becomes, for in the beginning, our support, our help, and then later it becomes the hindrance. That's why reason is the helper, reason is the bar. Knowledge was the helper, knowledge becomes the bar. This, the mental wisdom, becomes a kind of a barrier. But in the beginning, it is our support. You take the help of that. And so wearing still these countless knots of law, a spirit bound, stand up as nature's king. So these are the stages. The body, the mind, and the spirit. In the living man. The instruments of life are mind and body. Mind and body become, they hold the man together. But then when this is replaced by the inner indwelling conscious presence, which is there in all things, in each being, in every being, the spirit. The individualized spirit you may call the soul. That comes into the forefront. That takes charge. These external rules and laws and standards, mind-like standards, they will be wiped off. But this is a very difficult, long journey of consciousness. It is therefore an adventure of consciousness, as he has described earlier. Adventure means something that has not been done before, and where the possibility of failure is always there. To venture is to dare, to take a risk. So when you take up an adventure, you accept a battle. You might not succeed right away. And so for thousands of years, man has been striving to break out of the grip of unconscious matter, to move towards a little more light. And then somewhere deep inside, the certitude that it's not a little light, the light is hidden inside. The truth is that we are that. We are not moving towards that. We are that. But that has been trapped within, like a caged bird. This bird has to be freed. And the spirit becomes master, the rest becomes an expression of that guiding force. This is the transformation. The transformation is not imposing something that is impossible. It is to change ourselves into what we essentially are. We essentially are divine. Existentially, we are not. We are very much undivine. So make that, to remove that outer coating, which has grown with time, with our so-called education, so-called development, so-called demands of the outer nature. All this is not to go. It's not as if we have to give up the outer life. We have to make that life an instrument of that inner presence, which is there waiting for us to call it out. It is waiting for our call that you have to take over. You are the king, you are the ruler, you are the master. If we follow in the wake of that light, then we surely will reach the goal. So something in man dares, wants, asks for perfection. At present, man is very different from perfection. Man is not perfect. Then how does he dare to claim immortality? How does he get preoccupied with God and light and freedom when he seems to be the total opposite of these things? That is the victory. That is why it is special to be a man. Man can change from one stage to another. The gods don't change. So the gods can't do this. The demons, very dare, slowly, they have to make their surrender, because the demons have developed enormous power because of the huge egos that they represent. Man also is sometimes a demon when he has really this enormous inflated ego that thinks it can control the whole destiny of the earth. All this is the cycle of change. It rises to fall. It falls to rise. When we see things as they are today, we find things that are far from beautiful. But it is, if we take a, we might say, see things in a larger perspective, you realize it is a cycle. The cycle of growth, the cycle of rising, the cycle of failure. It is not a straight journey. Nothing in manifestation moves in a straight line. Not even, especially not in the world of matter. Air or light or electricity, they don't move in straight lines. They all move in waves and cycles and curves. Man is part of that world of matter also. He rises to fall, he falls to rise, he grows and forgets. And in his world of mind, the consciousness becomes obliterated. In his world of life, the ego takes over. The psychic presence, which is close to the heart, that is pushed into the background. In the world of the body, the inertia is there. So all these hindrances are constantly with us. But how do we dare to make that attempt? In spite of all these difficulties, in spite of all these hindrances, a mighty kinship is this daring's cause. We dare to make an attempt because we are kin to that. We are related with that same origin. We are children of immortality. There is no other source for our existence. We are projections of the divine creative consciousness. And somewhere in us, in some inmost part of our nature, that connection has always stayed. Man is more than man. To be more than man is what it is. What is a man? To exceed himself is man's manhood, Sri Aurobindo said. You go beyond yourself, then only you are a man. You stay within your circle of limits, you're just a thing, you're not a man. To break out, to move towards what has not been thought of, not been attempted, to attempt that, that is what it is to be a man. Therefore, a man has to be a hero. It's a hero warrior that mother expects the youth to be. Make of us the hero warriors. Fighting what? The battle of the future. What is this battle of the future? To manifest that which can be manifested, because the seeds of perfection are hidden. To help those seeds to grow, to bring out that new consciousness which is waiting to flower, to manifest. It is a very daring thing. A mighty kinship is this daring's cause. All we attempt in this imperfect world looks forward or looks back beyond time's gloss to its pure idea and firm inviolate type, in an absolute creation's flawless skill. Even in the world of form, even in the world of matter, all we do is to create that which is not the form, which is that concept of perfection from which the form has projected itself. There is that world, if Plato mentions it, there is that world of the ideas, perfect ideas, from which the projection has come. It is as if we are in a cave. He speaks of us being in a cave. So each thing looks forward or looks back. Looks forward because we have to manifest in the future something greater, something more perfect. Looks back because that perfection is already there within our inmost spirit. If I think of what a human being is, truly, he is an embodiment of the divine consciousness. But that divine consciousness is so very well hidden, covered over by so much that is not undivine, with impurity and ignorance. So we have to look deep inside, go back to the origin, go back to where we came from. We are children of God. We are the children of immortality. We have become mortals. We have accepted to be mortals, children of death. But we go back to that origin and go back to that pure inviolate type, that perfection from where we have been projected. Beyond time's gloss, it will not change. It's not something that time usually is a formation that gives us forms that come. Today you look like this, tomorrow you look different, Today you're a child, tomorrow you will not be a child. It's a continuous change. In the world of time, one of the factors that is constant is change. Change is constant. But changing towards what? Ultimately, changing towards what? To be that perfection. When something is changing, it has to reach its fulfillment. That fulfillment is not yet arrived at. That perfect humanity, which we have always had, we have dreamed of, to have a perfect humanity, a perfect race, a perfect being, that is waiting to manifest in the future, but because it is there somewhere within us. It can't come out. You can't come out, bring out something out of the soil if the seed were not already hidden. So within us, that seed of perfection is hidden. So that is the pure, inviolate type, which cannot be violated, which cannot be twisted, deformed. There is always that. In an absolute creation's flawless skill, even in the world of form, and that is great art. The artist doesn't copy from nature. Mother has told that to some person she was writing letters to who was an artist. You don't copy nature. Nature is a projection of that perfection which exists, pre-existed. It exists somewhere. And the artist somehow connects with that form. The average human being doesn't have that kind of eye. You have to have a different eyesight. You see not the form as it is, the form as it truly is, not as it is now, which is sometimes manifested, as Sri Aurobindo says, in idealized realism, which is Greek art. Say people don't look like the Greek god Apollo mostly. But there is that notion of an absolute perfect form. It has always lasted. Today we don't look like that, but we can. We dream of that. We hope for that. Because that will outlast our present stage, which degrades, which deteriorates, which breaks down, which weakens, which is deformed. We enjoy ugliness even. We move into other kinds of expressions. So in the world of art, to seize the absolute is the perfect, in shapes that pass. Not to copy a flower, but to copy that absoluteness of that flower. To fix the eternal's touch in time-made things. All things are time-made. If they are time-made, they will degrade. They will deteriorate. They will break up. But behind that, there is the eternal. So it's a constant play of apparent opposites. That eternity, perfection, is really that which is holding up the present. The present world is changing, rising and falling. It is held up by something which does not change because it is complete, which is perfect. This is the law of all perfection here. And that perfection in the world of form is what you may call art, great art. A fragment here is caught of heaven's design. It's as if the plan is already there in that other world, of which this world is some kind of a projection. A few, catch in an intuitive moment, in a moment of inspiration, in a moment of an inner contact, some connection with that perfection. Unfortunately, our vessel is so weak and so impure, it doesn't last. We can't hold on to it. Even if they do, comes the inspiration comes rushing down as sometimes it does, the vessel breaks down. That is why, for instance, I remember Mother telling us, the great poets, great writers, great musicians, they do receive sometimes showers of perfection of sound and sight and form, but the lower nature is still there. The weaker physical, the weaker vital, the weaker material being is still there. That is why once they have manifested that inspiration, they sink to a very low level. It's a kind of a release. It's as if it is very difficult to contain or stay in touch with the divine for too long, unless one has purified one's being from in all every detail. And that's a very slow, long process. If I have to manifest perfection, I have to be perfect in every cell of my being. Since I am not like that, that breaks down the body, that breaks down the life, because of the contact. Those who do have a contact in their innermost being are often very sensitive, very open, they do catch something, and then the rest of the being is incapable of keeping up with that contact. So the other part of the nature takes over after a while. You get tired, you break down, you have a nervous breakdown, you go mad. There are so many who go mad, they can't take it. So there has to be an integral, complete change, which is why Mother's emphasis on integral education. Develop every part of the being. It is extremely slow, but essential to perfect every part of the being. And that is her book on education, if you read the book. Right from the body and the life and the mind.
That book has so many beautiful answers. I did not try to read it in French.
It's a book of education. No, but she had first written a simpler, smaller book on education. Before which she had written an essay, which is called The Science of Life. It's not an art of life, it's a science of life. Science is knowledge, how to live. To live means what? Not just to eat and sleep and breathe and move. To put consciousness in every part of the being. So science of living, la science de vivre.
And not the art of living, she said the science.
Art of living is something else. That is Ravi Shankar. I don't want. She's not talking about that. It is something that has to be done almost as science. Science is knowledge. Science is wisdom. Art is the method. So they are two different things, slightly different. But just to be requires knowledge. Just to walk, just to think, just to live, to breathe. We don't even know how to breathe properly. We don't know how to sleep or eat properly. We are not fully, we don't exist completely. So it is that sense of absoluteness which we have to try to attain in every part of our being, in every small activity that we have. Even in the smallest activity, Mother gives the example, I remember, I never forgot it. One day, she was walking, before she came to Pondicherry, she was walking in Paris. And there was a lady walking in front of her. She didn't see the lady. But she said, "What a perfect movement and balance in the walk. This lady knows how to walk." She's never forgotten that. She says, 85 years later, I still remember that. From behind, how that lady walked. She just walked. She wasn't doing anything special. She was walking down the road. But that special grace and balance that is there in the body can transmit that. Walking doesn't mean you just move from one spot to another. Your body is your instrument. It is a spiritual gift to make that body an embodiment of beauty and perfection. This is what it is supposed to be, to seize the absolute in shapes that pass. And she says, that lady, I just can't forget because I saw a person who knew how to walk. We don't walk. We just move from one spot to another, somehow, anyhow, so that you arrive at your destination as fast as possible. So a fragment here is caught of heaven's design. This is the law of all perfection here. In the smallest thing, to be as it is supposed to be. A body is supposed to walk. So in small things, we have to make things as they really are supposed to be. Nothing more, nothing less, even in the world of matter. It is as if heaven is that world. Heaven is that world of perfection, which is projected in this world of matter. So here sometimes some people catch one expression or one moment of that perfection. Else could we never hope for greater life. If we accept ourselves the way we are and say this is how we are, this is who we are, we can never change. If we recognize that we have to become an expression of that perfection which we really have been made for. The body has been made to move, to live in, to breathe. If you know even how to breathe, the whole science of pranayama and what they call asanas and yoga nowadays, all this is to live in the body. The body is a medium of consciousness. It is not just you take a posture, but you invoke a certain state of consciousness and manifest it in the body. This is the law of perfection, the conscious force. Matter is the home of the spirit. And ecstasy, else could we never hope for greater life, and ecstasy and glory could not be. That sense of the marvelous. Matter can be the home of the marvelous, that which is beautiful. Beauty is the principle of the divine in the world of matter. Even in the littleness of our mortal state, even in this prison house of outer form, the outer form is dense. It traps the spirit. But even here, a brilliant passage for the infallible flame is driven through gross walls of nerve and brain. This is the pressure that comes down from above, of inspiration, of intuition, the divine light that comes down into the world of matter. So the mingling of matter and spirit, the constant marriage of the world of form and matter with the conscious spirit, this is really the science of living, even in the body. To make manifestation an expression of the spirit without abandoning the life of the body. The activity of the body becomes an expression of the spirit. So it is a brilliant passage for the infallible flame is driven through gross walls of nerve and brain. Because the brain judges, works out, thinks out, and is very confident of itself. A splendor presses or a power breaks through. Earth's great dull barrier is removed a while. The inconscient seal is lifted from our eyes and we grow vessels of creative might. This is the pressure of inspiration. The artist becomes an expression of a divine power. Because something is pressing down into his being. What he needs to be is to be receptive, to open, to allow that force to pass through the being. Okay? Should we stop? It's 6:15.